I wasn't watching a film about football, but actually one of those kinky British sex comedies.
Just instead of some comely British lass, you open your eyes and there's Gordon Banks.
Actually, Bobby Charlton. I didn't have the emotional response.
Or the physiological response, I'm guessing.
You can speak for yourself, George.
Hello and welcome to Dummy. My name is George Qureshi. I am the editor of Howler Magazine. Today I'm speaking with Carl Bromley, editor at Nation Books. But before we get to that, I just want to say that this week I'm in New York City and I got a chance to meet the Howler singers. They do the amazing introductions on our podcasts. And like a lot of the work we do on Howler, I had never met some of these people. I know them through my friend Lindsay Elliott, who I went to college with, and now he sings in a choir in New York City called Ghostlight. I went to one of their performances in a really beautiful old church on the Upper West Side, and it was unbelievably gorgeous singing. You know, they do a lot of fun stuff for us, but they take this very seriously. They give real concerts there. I think there's about 20 of them, and they're amazing. I'm not really even into this type of singing, but it was beautiful. And I highly recommend that if you are in New York City looking for something fun to do or something amazing to experience, that you look up Ghostlight. That's the plug. They didn't ask me to do this, but they're just really wonderful. And, you know, they help us out a lot with the singing they do for Howler. So now I'm going to turn back to Carl. Carl Bromley is an editor at Nation Books. He's one of the few editors in this country who brings soccer books into the marketplace, for which I am very grateful. Carl, thank you for joining me on Dummy.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for coming to my beautiful, spotless office in the heart of New York Publishing, just off Union Square. As you can see, I have the cleanest office in New York Publishing.
Yeah, I was going to ask you to actually give us a little tour through this. There's kind of a lot going on here.
We have a palm tree by my window and two empty bottles of Limca. Limca is a Indian soft drink, which I fell in love with over 25 years ago, and I still keep the odd bottle on hand just as a sort of nostalgia trip. I have a cartoon by Norman Mailer somewhere in the corner over there. I have a few old East German telephones that used to be in this office for many years. Of course, I have an Inter Milan calendar, but I've been so distressed by the course of Inter this season that I just realize now that it's still in February. I haven't even moved it to April or whatever month we're in at the moment.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, anyone who read issue 2 knows about your very deep affection for Inter. That was such a great little essay about how you came to love the club.
I do have a very deep affection for Inter, and thank you for publishing it. However, ever since Walter Mazzari has taken over as manager, I find the way that Inter plays almost makes me comatose in many respects.
I feel for you. Now, listen, Carl, can you please introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about what you do and why I'm here talking to you today.
My name is Carl Bromley. I'm the editorial director of Nation Books, which is a leading publisher of serious nonfiction in the United States, left-wing serious nonfiction, and we also have a very nice line of what we call smart books about soccer. The line began with Simon Cooper's book, Soccer Against the Enemy, which is known globally as Football Against the Enemy. And since then, we've done nearly a dozen books on the game. Some of those books include, over the last year, we've published a new edition of Eduardo Galeano's Soccer in Sun and Shadow, which I think is certainly jostles for the number one spot of the best book ever written about sport. Now, that's certainly a controversial statement, but it often makes those top 10 lists, and it's sort of certainly up there with C.L.R. James' Beyond a Boundary. We have the first American edition of Jonathan Wilson's Inverting the Pyramid. I think the book was a revolution in many ways in the sort of study of tactics in the game, and I think it's had an enormous impact, to the extent, actually, that this Christmas at my son's soccer club in Queens, I discovered the old head of the club regaling people at Christmas about the Danubian waltz, a style of football play during the interwar years in Austria, Hungary, Germany. And I just thought it was magnificent that he was just actually the living embodiment of Jonathan Wilson's book, until when I went up to him closer and I realized actually he was talking about Wilson's book. We have, hot off the press, David Goldblatt's new book, Football Nation, which is a sort of social and cultural history of Brazil as seen through Brazilian soccer. John Fuchs' book, Calcio, which we published as Winning at All Costs, his great chronicle of Italian soccer we published.
I mean, how did you get to start a list of soccer books like this? I imagine it was kind of a hard sell.
By luck in many ways. Fluke, I discovered Simon Cooper's book, Football Against the Enemy, in an old football shop, The Onion Bag, which used to be on First Avenue in the late 1990s, and they had a whole stock of football books there, soccer books. I discovered the book. I fell in love with it. I love the way that Simon traveled around the world looking at how politics and soccer intersected, whether it was Argentina, Brazil, East Germany, Britain, what have you. It was just an amazing way of looking at the world through sport and the world through politics and war. And it's just an amazing book, and it was a book that stayed with me. And it was always a book I hoped to publish at Nation Books. Nation Books is a largely current events politics imprint with a sort of left of center, left wing slant. And I always thought there was a place for it on my list. What I didn't know was about the American market. You obviously saw books available as imports in the sports section of bookstores, but I always wondered how big that market was. And what happened was Franklin Furr's book, How Soccer Explains the World, was published, and it was a massive bestseller. And I looked at its sales numbers, and I was shocked. And I also noticed that at the end of the book, he cites Simon's book, Football Against the Enemy, as an influence. So I took it to my colleagues who didn't know much about football, but they knew about how to read sales sheets and figured, well, maybe there's something here. So we licensed Football Against the Enemy from Simon's publisher, Orion, in London, and that's how it began. It began very modestly with no expectations, and we had to go into a number of printings. And I think Simon's very loyal. A few years later, he was in New York, and he was telling me about a project he was working on, which had not come Soccernomics by then. It was called Why England Lose, and we just thought there was no way we could publish a book like that over here called Why England Lose. And I think as the UK publisher discovered, ultimately, you couldn't really publish a book like that in England either. And ultimately, they actually retitled the book Soccernomics, and it's gone on to be a real success over there.
Well, yeah, you just gave me, what is this, the third edition? I feel like every time I see you, I'm getting a new edition of this book, which I'm not complaining at all. It's great. It's just taken off. It's got a life of its own now.
I've just given you the third lime-colored, beautifully tactile World Cup edition, which is actually substantially revised and updated. There's two new chapters.
And substantially bigger. It feels like it just keeps growing.
It's growing. It's not quite as big as, say, Gone with the Wind or something like that, but it's certainly acquiring some bulk. But it's also very lean. There's not one word wasted. There's no flab in this book. It's just its size is expanded.
So this past weekend, we were going out to Hofstra University. They were having a big conference about soccer, and you invited me to sort of skip some of the panels and come with you to a hotel out there. And we watched a soccer game. It was, with some of your writers, it was, you know, Simon and Stefan and John Foote and David Goldblatt was there. And the reason I bring this up is because, you know, for someone like me, or I guess anybody who works in an industry that they love and are excited about, it can be really interesting to meet, you know, older people who have come before and done interesting work. And so just to sit down and watch, you know, these guys interact and, you know, the way they knew each other, it's inspiring. It's something that, you know, that I try to do with the writers that we work with. Just get to know each other and have a little bit of a camaraderie around the game.
While we're watching this game, for the listeners, we were watching the FA Cup semi-final, Arsenal versus Wigan at Wembley Stadium. And I think Simon is a Arsenal fan, but he's a very much a sort of lapsed Arsenal fan. John Foote is a huge Arsenal fan. Not only his mood for the week, actually for the month, can often be located to how Arsenal perform either on a Saturday or Sunday. Every time I've watched Arsenal play with John, Arsenal always play badly and he's always gets into a terrific huff about it. But anyways, we had John Foote, we had Simon Cooper, we had Stefan, who is a Scunthorpe supporter. Again, he's not a fanatic, and he sort of looks at the game with a much more cooler, analytical eye. And then we had David Goldblatt, who I discovered is a Spurs fan, and he really enjoyed.
Yeah, he was really sticking it to John Foote. Every time Arsenal sort of touched the ball and it, you know, didn't go anywhere, he would really just rib him, which I thoroughly enjoyed.
Yes, it was very, very entertaining. Not so entertaining if you're an Arsenal fan, and I definitely follow Arsenal. They're not my favorite team, but they've always been a team that I've admired for many, many years. And watching David and John go at each other was rather like those two guys from The Muppet Show, those two old geezers or whatever. It was a joyful sight to behold, although everything on the pitch was just, from the perspective of an Arsenal fan, was quite unpleasant to watch in many respects.
You know, you read a book written by two people, and you have this idea of this like sort of monolithic point of view, but it was great to watch them sort of go at each other because, you know, you sort of get you get a little insight into sort of how that relationship works and how they arrive at some of their opinions, you know, which I'm sure in a lot of cases start out pretty far apart, and they have to sort of work that out together.
It was wonderful having those guys together. It was, because you actually get a lot of knowledge just listening to them watch the game. I mean, you know, Simon has very strong opinions. Simon loves being contrarian, and has a huge dose of cynicism when it comes to the game. Basically, Simon is always skeptical of people who invest too much meaning into the sport. And I think Stefan was more...
Well, you got the feeling that Stefan was looking at everything as sort of a data point. I mean, he's trying to quantify this stuff.
It's a data point, very much. I mean, he's an economist. He's a sports economist. He's a brilliant analyst of data. And he's actually writing a book for us about football finance, which I think is going to be amazing. It's part of a sort of new Soconomics series of spin-offs from Soconomics. And it's interesting what both bring to the project. Superficially, you'd say Stefan brings the sort of economics, the understanding of money. But Simon also, I mean, Simon covered money for the Observer newspaper. He's been at the Financial Times for nearly 20 years. So both of them actually have many things in common. I think what Simon brings is his experience as a reporter, of someone who's basically been looking behind the curtain for the last 20 years at the game. Plus, he knows many of the personalities. So he brings a sense of reality. He's also a very stylish prose writer. And so when you read his books, you're immediately engaged by the words on the page and his wit. I mean, if you read Stefan's work on his own, his columns are great. I mean, he writes a lot for the British newspapers, and they're great. For an academic, he's a quite stylish and lucid writer. But Simon brings that sort of A-list journalism.
So Simon's two books are sort of generalist books about soccer. We mentioned David Goldblatt has a new book coming out on Brazilian soccer and John Foote's Italian soccer book. Now, one thing we haven't mentioned, you've had two books recently on Spanish soccer.
We published Jimmy Byrne's book La Roja, which is a history of Spanish football. Another book, which we're extremely proud of having just published, is, of course, Sid Lowe's Fear and Loathing in La Liga, who you...
Yeah, Sid was our first dummy. He was on our podcast a couple weeks ago.
And I hear he helped crash the Howler server or something.
Oh, yeah. We had to upgrade our bandwidth twice after that. It was so great, actually, because it just meant people were listening. But we had to scramble to sort of buy more bandwidth from our podcast server.
Well, you're gonna absolutely have no bandwidth worries with me. Even though this is being recorded pre-broadcast, I can almost hear people nodding off asleep as they hear me. But anyway.
And so that reminds me of the piece you've just written for us, which is going to be in the next issue of Howler that comes out next month in middle of May. And we assigned a couple of writers to watch, you know, the official World Cup films. And you got 1970. And in your lead, you describe waking up in the middle of it. You, I guess, dozed off and you woke up and you, I guess the music and whatever made you think that you were watching some kind of softcore porno?
It's true, absolutely. You know, it was a film. Every World Cup, FIFA commissioned a documentary filmmaker to make a film of the competition, and ordinarily they're pretty miserable films. And this one from 1970, of one of the most glorious, beautiful World Cup competitions ever staged, doesn't disappoint in its badness. I fell asleep watching it, and, you know, it's sort of semi-sleep when you can hear noises in the background. And for a while, I was really, really certain that actually I wasn't watching a film about football, but actually one of those kinky British sex comedies from the early 70s. Well, it's like Confessions of a Window Cleaner is one of the most famous of the genre. And if you actually go on YouTube and watch it, I mean, it's full of like cheesy music, slapstick comedy, and then the sex scenes are always done 48 or 72 frames a second. They're speeded up or what have you. And it's sort of naughty British comedy or what have you.
Just instead of some comely British lass, you open your eyes and there's Gordon Banks.
I saw Gordon Banks instead, and there was actually Bobby Charlton, actually. I didn't have the emotional response you watch.
Or the physiological response, I'm guessing.
You can speak for yourself, George. I was watching it purely as a film critic. But anyway, so after watching the film, I found out that both the composer for the film and the script writers actually had scripted a lot of British sex comedies. And I thought it's such an unusual thing. Why would they get these script writers and cinematographer and a composer who basically have excelled themselves writing British sex comedies to make a documentary about the Mexico? Now, I should say, in all fairness, that actually the director of the film is actually quite a respected Mexican filmmaker, but my suspicion is that he was never let anywhere near the editing suite or something. And the other thing about the film is that I think it looked like in every stadium they visited, they only basically took two cameras along. If you imagine making that great Zidane documentary with only two cameras, would be impossible. There's a wonderful moment when one of the most famous saves in football history is made by Gordon Banks from, I think, a Pelé header, and it looked like the cameraman was filming it from one of those air balloons.
I just read a quote from Banks where he said something like, when he leaves the earth, he'll be remembered more for that save in 1970 than for winning the World Cup in 1966. which I thought was really, really funny and probably true. Anyway, I wanted to ask you about something you were telling me about earlier this week, which was that you had just come back from the London Book Fair, and the publishers over there were really excited about, you know, expanding into the American market, which I think maybe bodes well in terms of, you know, finally people thinking, okay, we have a mature enough market for soccer books to do well here, which, you know, just is sort of a one of many factors and signs that we're always sort of looking for and searching for when we think about the maturation of the American soccer market.
I try to calm their excitement, because if they think it's a bull market, they're going to try and get me to pay massive advances, and that's not the business I'm in. So yes, one of the things is I met a lot of people at the London Book Fair and Earls Court, a lot of publishers from Penguin, Random House, who have really, really strong established lists of books about football. I think probably the best are Viking and Yellow Jersey, who have done just amazing books. And then, of course, there's a sort of side industry of celebrity biographies and celebrity autobiographies. So there's two basically kinds of books about football in the rest of the world. You have the celebrity biography, the celebrity autobiography, and you have the sort of smart, behind-the-scenes, looking at the dynamics behind the game. And I have a feeling of unease that the direction of a lot of sports publishing is going the way of the celebrity autobiography. Book publishers in London have been known to bet the house on these kind of books, books by Beckham, Wayne Rooney.
Where are we in the, like, the five-part series of like a five edition series of Wayne Rooney's autobiography? They signed that up like way long ago, and I'm not even paying attention to where these are.
I think we're waiting for part three now. I think it's the teenage years, the young manhood of Wayne Rooney.
It's almost like Harry Potter without any of the anticipation.
It is, without almost no anticipation. I'd be surprised if...
Though maybe they'll get better. I mean, now that he's had some hardship. I mean, we might get the hair plug episode, the Ferguson conflicts, the Moyes era.
I hope so, yeah. The rule is basically footballers actually have a lot more interesting things to say at the end of their career than during the height of their career. And so, you know, for example, if you read Jamie Carragher's autobiography, it's a wonderful book. It's very entertaining. It's very blunt. It's very opinionated. He's got strong idea of politics and his passions. He also has a very strong Scouse identity, a sense of like Liverpool against the rest of the country. And that really informs the book, and it makes it such an entertaining read.
Right. Well, another book that you published, just to bring it back all the way, is Simon Cooper's The Soccer Men. And my favorite piece in that in his book is an essay where he just savages English player autobiographies. And I think he said the least bad was Jamie Carragher.
I think the worst book in history is the Ashley Cole book, where he whined and whined and whined about being on £50,000 a week wages at Arsenal. And of course, the British nation wept with him. But in the new edition of Soccer Men, which we've also issued, there's a wonderful essay by Simon on Zlatan Ibrahimovic. It's a wonderful piece.
Oh, so that's new. That wasn't in the original edition.
It wasn't in the original. It's a piece where he explores Zlatan's books and Philip Roth's novels. And it's just a work of genius. And actually, Simon isn't being sarcastic. Zlatan's book is brilliant. It's one of the most forthright.
Oh, I loved Zlatan's book. We're actually publishing an excerpt from that one as well in the next issue.
It's tremendous. It really is. And it gives you an amazing insight into what it's like to be an immigrant from Yugoslavia growing up in sort of social democratic Sweden. And Zlatan always an outsider, but he used to hang out with all the outsiders. And all the outsiders were really the immigrant kids, the people who had fallen out of favor at school and what have you. And that sort of formed his identity, his mental toughness. And it's just to read chapters about Barcelona are just fascinating as an insight into Zlatan's psychology, his sensitivities.
Yeah, I spoke about this with Sid, especially I wanted to know sort of what the objective take on his Barcelona chapter was, because, you know, it's obviously very one-sided and fascinating, but I could imagine that there were other points of view on that.
Yes, and Andrea Pirlo, in his new autobiography, which I've just finished reading, fantastic book, talks about actually, you know, when Zlatan talks about Pep Guardiola being a philosopher, Zlatan means to be sarcastic and insult him.
You know, Sid brought that up when I talked to him. He said, you know, it's not such a bad thing to be called a philosopher.
But actually, it's a compliment. Pirlo says it actually is a complete compliment to him, actually, because that's what Guardiola is. He is a football philosopher in the way that Arsene Wenger is. And to some respect, Brian Clough was, but in a much more sort of bloody-minded Northern British English kind of way, but he was a football philosopher too. He was a very smart guy.
Was Clough the most cerebral manager to ever emerge from England?
No, I don't think so. But he was certainly one of the most committed socialists in the game. There was a minor strike, or there was a strike, or something. You know, Clough would go on the march, he would donate to the cause. So he's very much a man of the sort of old British left in many respects.
Well, and it seems like there's a bit of a tradition there.
Yeah, like Bill Shankly. Bill Shankly described himself as a socialist. And even Alex Ferguson does. I mean, Alex Ferguson, I think, has a chapter in his new autobiography where he talks about his politics and his socialism and how it informs some aspects of the way he's managed and what have you.
Maybe that's going to play into his the course he's teaching at Harvard Business School this coming semester.
Yes, Capital Volume 1 will be assigned to everyone to be read. And maybe for an upper level course, he'll assign volume 3, the volume on debt.
That might be extra credit.
Extra credit, yes. I'd love to see that syllabus he's designing.
Oh man, I'm trying to find out how we can get a writer into that classroom. I think it would be so fascinating.
Well, maybe they should sign up and take the course or something.
Yeah, I haven't really checked recently, but I'm not sure Howler can afford Harvard Business School tuition.
Probably involves takes a small fortune.
Well, maybe we can get a scholarship.
I'm just going to say you might have to take out a loan. If you're going to probably pay the course fees, you're going to have to like go into debt. At the very least, get in touch with the dean of the department or something or other. But yeah, that would be a great... I mean, I think the fact that Ferguson is actually going to be teaching or running these seminars at Harvard, again, is another symptom or it symbolizes the growing interest the game is having.
All right. Well, that seems like a pretty good place to leave it, Carl. Thank you so much for coming on to Dummy.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that'll do it for Dummy. This is the third episode. If you like it, please leave a comment and a like or whatever in the iTunes store. Tell your friends about it. If you missed it this week, we were written up in the New York Times. We were part of a trend story, which is a very controversial genre of newspaper story, but we were very, very psyched to be in it. Anything that brings new readers is really helpful. So please tell your friends. Please check us out if you haven't seen the actual print magazine. It's at howlermagazine.com. Today's episode was produced by Ryan Katniss. My name is George Qureshi. Until next time, thanks for listening.